Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to be coming to you live from the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown in a light-filled atrium with floor-to-ceiling windows, books, 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 and wonderful people here in the library and, of course, listening who are all about books, as is this program. This is our book show, and I am delighted to welcome, as always, the peerless Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Welcome, Cassie Rose.
Good morning. It's good to be here.
Our own Robin Nesbitt, who is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, will be along shortly to offer the very latest in the library's quick picks. But it is my real privilege to welcome someone who is no stranger, certainly, to 89.7 NPR News, but I think it's the first time he's been on the book show, author Andrew Welsh Huggins. Welcome, Andrew.
Great to be here.
Thank you for coming in. Andrew Welsh Huggins is a journalist. He is the Associated Press reporter, legal affairs reporter in Columbus, and he is the author of the Andy Hayes Mysteries, as well as a number of books of nonfiction. So my first question to you, Andrew, is how do you balance one of your areas as a reporter is capital punishment. How do you balance that with writing these page-turner mysteries?
You know, I try to practice a strict separation of church and state, both with my time and, with my themes. And that is as practical as I do my fiction writing early in the morning, usually between 6 and 8, and then again on Sunday. And then I put on a different cap and work on these legal issues like the death penalty, which is, probably the most that's the most intense legal topic I cover, probably other than maybe opioids. But I try to keep them separate as much as possible. A number of the report on, at least in general terms, have ended up in the books. So there is kind of a back and forth there. But as much as possible, I try to keep them separate.
Tell me, who is Andy Hayes?
Andy Hayes is, he is probably my alter ego. I just couldn't mount that becoming a championship level college quarterback. But he's an ex Ohio State quarterback, ex Cleveland Browns quarterback. He did the worst thing you could possibly do in Ohio his senior year. He was leading the team to the national championship. He got himself arrested the week before the Michigan game, watched the game from jail, and quickly went from being the most honored Ohio State, well, really honored Ohio sports figure to the most reviled. It takes him several years to rebuild his reputation, and because he's a big guy and is used to getting hit on the head, he ends up being hired as an investigator for a defense attorney, and then he sort of branches out on his own. Andy is a guy who's always trying to do, now he's really trying to do the right thing. He recognizes that he screwed up a lot as a young man. You know, he has two ex-wives, he has a son by each ex-wife, he has a string of broken relationships, and part of the backdrop of the book is as he's solving mysteries, he's trying to be the guy that he knows he should be and that he wasn't.
I dare say that a lot of people can relate to the sordid part of Andy Hayes' life and want to relate to the great part, the football hero part. It seems to me that all he can do if he's a disgraced football player is become a private eye, for goodness sake. Does he develop a passion for that work? Does the passion he had on the field translate into investigating crime?
You know, he does, and it took him a while to admit this to himself. Actually, there's a passage in the fourth book, The Hunt, where he talks about finally admitting that some of the things that led him to be such a great football player have transferred to him being a pretty dogged investigator. And he also has to admit that passion is still preventing him from maybe being the best romantic partner to women. He recognizes that he does not have a job that is the kind of position that has regular hours, and he often misses dates and is out all night. But he's sort of come to recognize that, frankly, he likes doing that. He liked pursuing the big win, and he likes getting to the bottom of things. And that's been an interesting evolution for him.
Well, I hope people take this question the right way, but if he were happily married, would he be that much interesting?
There's not a lot of happily married investigators out there. Louise Penny's Quebec investigator does have a very happy marriage, but that is something that I wrestled with early on. You know, one of the great private eyes of fiction, Spencer by Robert B. Parker, famously was with Susan Silverman. And a lot of people eventually found that relationship pretty boring. And I've been married 33 years. I'm a proponent of people being together, but it's just not going to work for Andy.
It seems like in crime literature that with the detectives, they have to be these fallen heroes. They have to, most that I have read, they have drinking problems, they have gambling problems, or they also have something that is like one who it was a Scandinavian detective. He loved opera. And so he would get in the car and he'd be driving to all these crime scenes and listening to all these wonderful arias. But it gives them such depth, and it gives the reader something to hook onto that is very human, that allows them to have some break or something to connect to other than, you know, the gruesomeness of a crime, for example.
But Spencer's girlfriend is a psychiatrist with a really cool apartment in Back Bay. I mean, that's one of the things that I remember about her.
That's right.
And I don't think they ever get married. And I think also their relationship is up and down, which feeds, I think, into the spice of the story. Andrew, how many Andy Hayes mysteries are there? And can you tell us about the latest one?
The one that's out now, there's five so far. There'll be a sixth one out in April. There's five out now. The third brother combines some elements of reporting I've done over the years on the Somali community, on extremism, both what you'd call Islamic extremism, but also white supremacists. And it actually also touches a little bit on illegal immigration. So I was trying to hit all these hot topics in it. Essentially, Andy rescues a Somali woman who's being harassed in a parking lot. The community is so grateful that they hire him to try to track down a missing teenager, a Somali teenager. The government's convinced that this young man has run away to become radicalized. The family is absolutely not convinced, and it's up to Andy to find this kid before the government finds him and arrests him, and also before some other bad things happen.
You are writing a series because of that. Do you have several ideas or several different volumes percolating at once, or are you focused on one at a time?
You know, I always have an idea for the next one in my head, and I obviously, you know, I have an ideas file that I look at and I write things down. But generally speaking, I'm only about a book ahead in my head. So the one that is coming out in April, that's called Fatal Judgment. And as I was wrapping that up, I started to think about the seventh one. Typically, I take the summers off from the series. I don't do any writing on it over the series. I work on other things. So that's usually the time when I look ahead.
How do you keep track of all the details from the book? So let's say Andy does something in the first book, and you're now writing the fourth, the fifth, the sixth book. Do you remember that detail that could affect what is happening in this fifth book? You know, that miss that you don't want to create where a reader would say, well, wait a minute, he said or he did this early in this book.
Readers get very obsessive.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They do.
Well,
do you have a spreadsheet?
What I need is what George Martin did, the author of the Game of Thrones books. He actually hired a blogger who knew more about his books than he did.
Interesting.
But before I resort to that, I have all the books near me. I have a biography file that is every character that shows up, what book they're in, what they did, what the relationship was, and that's an electronic file, so it's easily searchable. And that helps a lot. That's probably the biggest way that I can remember things. And then sometimes I just do the old-fashioned thing. I pull the book off the shelf and say, now, who is he dating, or what was going on at that time?
Because also you have to age them appropriately, too. So if over time is happening, you can say you have to be careful that, you know, the physical attributes of them, that they are if it's 10 years in the future or whatever, or something has happened to them, if they have a physical condition or if their hair is graying or something like that, those are the details that readers would pick up.
Yeah, this is a real debate in the mystery world. I just got back from BoucherCon, which is the North America's largest mystery conference, and there was actually a lot of talk about this. How do you age your investigators? Do you age your investigators? So Michael Connelly, who writes the Harry Bosch series, has chosen to age Bosch in real time. Spencer obviously did not age in real time because I think he'd be like 90 now. I have made the decision to sort of take the Sue Grafton approach and slowly age Andy. I'm not going to age him in real time. He's always going to be sort of a certain age, but I'm going to just do a dance with it. His kids are going to grow up, and that's why they call it fiction.
I'm just hoping there's room for those of us who are not young and not buff to be heroes in books like you're writing, Andrew Welsh Huggins. Andrew is the legal affairs reporter for the AP in Columbus, Ohio. He is the author of the Andy Hayes mystery series and several highly acclaimed books of nonfiction. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. You are listening to All Sides Weekend Books live from the downtown branch, the new downtown branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, in one of the most beautiful spaces for reading and for books that I've seen in many years. If you are living within the sound of my voice and you haven't come to see the library yet, get in your car and come on down, because this is really something you don't want to miss. I do want to throw out a couple of hellos, a couple of names of great people who have helped make this day possible. Greg Dodd, Director of Marketing for the Columbus Metropolitan Library, he and I have been emailing for years about coming here today. And Ben Zanitsky, who is the marketing PR guru here. Thank you, Ben, as well, for making this happen. Cassie Rose, I wanted to ask you if you have a recommendation for us in a few minutes left for our first segment.
Yes, I do. I've got a great book that I just finished called Washington Black, and it's by Essie Adugian. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing her name correctly. Her book has been longlisted for the Man Booker Prize, which the shortlist is going to come out next week. But I think that we're going to be hearing a lot about this book in the United States. It just got published this month. It takes place in the 1830s on a slave plantation in the West Indies, and about a young boy named Washington Black. They call him Wash. And, you know, there's a horrendous part of it where you're having to read about the slavery, which is very difficult. But the owner of the plantation has a brother who comes and takes Washington with him to be his assistant. And he's somewhat of an inventor, and he's inventing a cloud cutter, which we would call a hot air balloon. And with the cloud cutter, they manage to get off the plantation. And I'm not giving anything away, but something happens there where they both have to get off that plantation and get away for their lives. So there's this great adventure story that's happening that goes up the East Coast. It also goes into the Arctic, to England, and into Africa.
That's why you have to love the minds of these writers who take something as reprehensible as slavery, but mm-hmm. then puts in a hot air balloon, for goodness sake, and unlimited escape, unlimited travel. It sounds like a page-turner. You've got that for us.
It's certainly a book that you get involved in. It's one of those where you want to see what keeps happening.
Go deep.
Yes, you want to go deep. But also there's this great appreciation for what the author has done in terms of bringing knowledge about slavery to the forefront, issues of identity, issues of freedom and what that is for each person. So she doesn't skim over the difficult issues, but she also doesn't belabor them either.
Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. She'll be here through the entire show. Robin Nesbitt will be along shortly to offer the latest quick picks from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Andrew Welsh Huggins, I have two of your books with me right now, Slow Burn and Capital Punishment. What am I going to discover when I open these books? And should I read them in a specific order?
The books are actually written, there is an arc to them, but they're written so that you can read either one. Slow Burn is the story of Andy trying to determine the innocence of someone convicted of an arson homicide. And Capital Punishment is set in the Ohio State House where a murder takes place.
Oh, we'll start with that one. That's great. Andrew Welsh Huggins, thank you so much for joining us today on All Sides Weekend Books. It's always great to hear about what you're doing. We have the new Andy Hayes coming out when?
It's coming out in April. It's called Fatal Judgment.
And the newest one now that one can pick up is?
The Third Brother.
the third brother. Andrew Welsh Huggins, I thank you very much for being here. Cassie Rose, you're going to stick around. We will be right back for another segment of All Sides Weekend Books coming to us from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. I'm Christopher Purdy. Don't go away. We are back for another segment of All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy, coming to you live from the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown in this great sun-filled atrium with the ever-excited Greg Dodd, Marketing Director of the Library, making faces at us through the audience. Robin Nesbitt is here from the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library with the latest of the library's quick picks, and Cassie Rose, WOSU book critic, remains. Cassie's blog is thelongestchapter.com. As we are talking about books, an idea comes to you, or you have a question, or you want to shoot us a recommendation, send me an email at allsides@wosu.org. Robin Nesbitt, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How's everything at the magnificent Hilliard branch?
Busy and booming, as always.
All right,
yep,
that's very good. First of all, explain what the Quick Picks genre is, and then maybe give us a recommendation.
Okay. Quick Picks are bestsellers that we purchase that you may have a hold on it, you're waiting for it, but we buy it and have some extra copies sitting in the branch. They typically come out Tuesday mornings. That's when publishers release their new books. There is, you can't put them on hold. You just have to come in. They're there, and they check out for 21 days with no renewals. So it's pretty exciting when you walk in and you're like, hey, there's that new book I've been waiting for.
Okay, what is The Waiting List for Fear by Bob Woodward?
You know, I knew you were going to ask. I knew you were going to ask me that. I forgot to check the waiting list, but I will say I had a customer very first thing Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock saying, where is it? And we had it there for him. But yeah, it's...
You had it there for him?
Well, we had a quick pick. It was a quick pick. Yeah, quick pick.
Tuesday morning. You have to get in at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Correct, 9 o'clock in the morning. I am literally number 693.
Okay.
I'm literally number 69. But you know what happens?
Right.
You look at that number and you think, well, not in my lifetime. Right. In maybe 3 weeks, you get it.
One of the things we pride ourselves here at Columbus Metropolitan Library, we buy at 2-to-1 ratio. So we look at how many holds there are, and then we buy to make sure that there's only two people for every copy that we own. So that we want people to get their hands on the books quickly. Obviously, you want to read Fever now when the news is breaking, when it's hot. So we want to make sure that you're getting it now and not 6-8 weeks later.
Okay, so what's Texas? Texas Ranger.
So James Patterson, we've talked a lot about him on our show. So he's got another one. Gosh, love him. He writes with a guy. This one's with Andrew Burrell, and this is called Texas Ranger. So this is about a guy named Rory Yates, who is a ranger. He has had some problems, and so he's decided to go home to Texas. And when he gets home, he is accused of murdering his ex-wife. And so rapidly he gets wrapped up into...
I wouldn't get off the plane.
I know,
right? Kidding me?
Exactly. So these... Patterson is just fabulous. He writes a book. I think he has one that comes out every 6 weeks. But he has...
But with Bill Clinton.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, yes.
Exactly. But he has a huge fan base. He really does a good job of, I think, bringing light to other authors. And the other thing he does is that he also does a good job of giving money away to small independent bookstores and to libraries. So I have just been handed, Christopher, we have 1,672 holds on Fear, which doesn't surprise me in the least.
And you're going to get 1,000 more about noon
right?
Today,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it. I've started it.
So have you really?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Is it? Can you? You could put it down.
Well, yeah, because the first part of it, he's talking about the election, so I'm starting to skim through that because I really want to get to the part where we're in the White House and what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that I'm telling you that you should.
Right.
I'm just saying it's a very hot book right now that everybody's talking about. Everybody except Cassie Rose, who has a little more class than the rest of us.
Thanks, Christopher.
Cassie Rose, give us another recommendation. And also, we do want to make the point of talking about The Great American Read.
Yeah.
But go ahead and tell me what you brought lately.
I'm going to recommend a graphic novel. I recommended one at the last show, and then now on this one. They are, which is not typical for me, but I am finding some really good ones. And this one is called, it comes out this month, called The Three Escapes of Hannah Arendt. And it's a portrait of this very difficult 20th century philosopher and her complicated life. And being that it's a graphic novel, it is
fascinating, and it is so easy to absorb, and the illustrations are incredible, although I don't know that you call them illustrations. I think that in this genre you call them frames. But it's a portrait, also really you could say it's almost a biography. She grew up in Königsberg, Germany, and she was a German Jew, so she got caught up in Nazism and did, that was her first escape. She made it to France and was put in a detention camp, and that became her second escape. And I don't want to go on too much further about what the escapes are, but what you get in this book, it's not just what's going on with her, but the, her circle of people were these great philosophers, filmmakers, writers, just incredible minds in the 20th century. And so you get these little profiles of them as they come in and out of her life. So you get this history that is truly just fascinating. And, you know, talk about a page-turner. I just sat down and just started reading this book, and it was one of those, it was like, you know, I got to turn the light out and go to bed. It was like midnight or going on, you know, one in the morning, just because it's what you see in the way that he has brought out her characterization in what you, you see under this author's pen. It's Ken Krimstein who works with the New Yorker, so you know that his work is top-notch. And it's all in black and white except for green, which is only shown on her. And it may be, she may be a black black illustration, which then it would be a green pearls around her.
It's like the red coat in Schindler's List.
Yes.
That just came to me.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. So I would highly recommend looking at this. And certainly if you like history, you like biographies, you don't want to read a 500-page doorstopper about Hannah Arendt, this would be the book to pick up. And Hannah Arendt might come to mind for you because she coined the phrase, the banality of evil.
Now, you said that you were relatively new to graphic novels.
Yes, I am.
So I'm curious to know what you are getting from them. What, if anything, surprised you about them? What made you, because you're now wanting to talk more about them and to read more of them. What is the attraction, the appeal that might differ from, you know, a more conventional book type?
I think that it's the experience of having the images with the words. It's a whole different reading experience, and what, and I don't know what it is that goes on in the head, but it's very different than reading the straight narrative. And I just don't want to put it down. It goes very fast. It's lighter. I'm absorbing the information, and I feel a kind of joy when I'm reading these books. Even if it's difficult subject matter, there is some kind of a lightness that comes with going through each of the frames and being able to stop and look at what the illustrations are. How has this craft of this author, who is also an illustrated, you know, come to light here? The expressions on Hannah Arendt's face, the bubbles that come up with the way that she talks.
Well, this has come up before. We've talked about this, that the graphic novels are incredibly popular, and it's a great way. It ties into this morning's conversation about hooking kids into reading, especially boys. Boys will gravitate towards the pictures, and then you can kind of get them into
They'll
the reading.
Think it's comic books.
Correct.
They're not,
correct.
But they'll think they're
well,
comic
I mean,
books.
Actually, the way, I guess in are, the but, trade, it is. Yeah. They are called comics. It it has grown up. At first, comics was a bad word. They went to graphic novel. Now comic is back, and it's a good term. So, yeah.
You're saying that it's a good term in referring to books like
comics. Yep.
Really?
Yep. They're owning that kind of that terminology. We actually have a big it's Columbus Comics Connection here at Main Library in September, I think, at the end of the month. So this whole area will be filled with people reading, buying artists. We have panels and stuff like that.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great event.
It is a great event.
You'll get a lot of young people for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, terrific.
Absolutely. Go to our website and get more information. Columbuslibrary.org.
Looking at the list for the Great American Read, I was just curious if anybody has read anything lately that's on the Great American Read, or you've been compelled to read something you've neglected until now because of it. That's happened to me a couple of times, but I'm wondering if any of you have.
I tried to go back and read Dune again. I read Dune when I was in high school. It just didn't crack it for me this time around. So I don't know if I don't have the patience that I had in high school or what, but I did think about going back and trying to read Dune. So I need to pick out some other things here and reread, but I'm still voting every day for Harry Potter, by the way.
Yes.
So, you know, there's that.
I'd vote for that too.
Right, exactly.
Talking about getting boys to read, that the first Harry Potter book was marketed. One of the hooks they said was, you want your 9-year-old boy to read something, give him Harry. And they did.
Yep,
they ate it, you know. And 49-year-old boys read them too, as I was then, not now.
Right.
How about you, Cassie Rose?
Well, I think I've mentioned it on the show. I did attempt to read Another Country by James Baldwin, and I just didn't
finish it, or I didn't stop reading it. I don't really know where I'm at with it, but I just keep thinking I need to just get back into it. And I'm finding when I am rereading books or I'm picking up some of the books, my choices are, it's not as easy a read as I thought it would be. And I don't know if it's because they're of different times, different, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like I reread, and I've said this many times, Rebecca, it wasn't the same as the first experience. And so I think that has made me hesitate in going into some of these books because I know that it might take away something that I felt when I first read it.
Take this the right way, but I think that something like Rebecca, and certainly James Baldwin, I think if you read that when you're a young person, it makes a very, very different impression on you
than
it might be later on.
That's a good point. Yeah. Good point.
I reread The Alchemist because I love Paulo Coelho's books. One book that of his that's not on the list is Veronica Decides to Die, which is one of these books that has a twist to it that you throw it against the wall and it's almost life-changing. It's something that I really remembered. I just read Gone with the Wind. You don't have to read Gone with the Wind. I'm here to tell you, okay? I mean, first of all, it doesn't play real well in the 21st century. If you've seen Fiddle-dee-dee, if you've seen Clark Gable and Vivian Leigh, you've done the book. I'm sorry, but there you are.
I've read Gone with the Wind twice. I loved it when I was a kid, but to go back and now read it again, I think it would lose something for me.
It's hard to read it now as we are hopefully more sensitized. Than maybe we were in 1935 when the book was published. But yeah, I just found it a little...
I was just at the Stratford Festival and heard Margaret Atwood speak, and she was asked why she took... Hogarth has republished Shakespearean novels, or Shakespearean plays, into contemporary novels. And she was asked why she picked The Tempest. She picked The Tempest, and the new book is called Hagseed, and she says, at my age, The Tempest appeals to me. When you're younger, you know, an older person now looks at Romeo and Juliet and get over it, you know? Whereas a younger person will look at The Tempest and like, what's your problem, you know? So I think that's a piece of it is where you are in your life,
Your life, right?
But I really liked her explanation of why she picked The Tempest versus some of the other plays. So it's good.
What's the latest quick picks? Let's have another quick picks from the Columbus
Library.
The
quick picks go so fast. I can't get my hands on them. So we have Walter Mosley has a new one out, John Woman. This is actually a standalone. He writes a mystery series, but he also does a lot of standalones. And so this new one is out. It should have been out last week. It's September 4th. And this is Cornelius, which is a son of an Italian-American woman and an older black man from Mississippi named Herman, and who reinvents himself as Professor John Woman. But it says it's compulsively readable. I actually haven't read Walter Mosley for a while, and I really regret that. I need to get back to him. So maybe this is a good one to start with because I don't like his mystery series. I haven't kept up with that. But a standalone might be a good thing to go back to. So that was out last week, September 4th. And again, that's not on my shelf, so it's flying off the shelf.
They're flying off the shelves. Yep. I don't know Walter Mosley. What have I missed?
He's an African-American author who has one of the – a pretty lengthy series. I'm trying to think. I don't remember what his character's name is. But he also has a lot of independent works too. But well-respected in the field, good writer, gets good reviews, and is a popular author.
Page-turner?
Yeah, yeah.
Does he throw a hockey puck at you?
I don't think he throws a hockey puck at
you. Okay.
Yeah.
Because some of them do. They completely surprise you.
I don't think his aren't. My recollection of that series is it's not quite that twisty read where you get to the end and you're like, what? I didn't see that one coming. So.
By the way, everybody.
But I could be wrong.
Cassie Rose's favorite book is Saul Bellow's Humboldt's Gift, which I read last week when I took a week off. I needed a week off to do it.
Yeah, it's a big one.
A very dense, very funny book, and I really appreciate the recommendation. It wasn't my first Saul Bellow, but it was a little bit atypical. It is not an easy read.
No, it's not.
But it's a very enjoyable read.
It is, and I think it's the characters that make it.
As well
as I think the Chicago setting.
Right.
And that, you know, the main character, he is just, he's a Chicago boy, even though he's made it in the big time and he's famous and he could be living the high life. He just goes back to his Chicago roots and he gets into all sorts of trouble when he plays a poker game and, you know, the mob thinks he's cheating him and then they come and they, you know.
And he has a very complicated, he has a horrible ex-wife who's suing him for every dime he has.
Mm-hmm.
He has a hot girlfriend with an impossible mother.
Yes.
A sort of pseudo mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of great characters in this. It's almost a graphic novel without the graphics.
It is. Thank you. I love that. That's, yes. And if maybe someday some will turn it into a graphic novel, because it would be perfect.
Maybe you will.
Oh.
What is on your blog right now, thelongestchapter.com?
I just wrote about a series called Bookmarked. It's called the Bookmark series, and what it is about an important book that had a life-changing consequence on a writer's life, that it in some way affected them so much that, and then they write about how it affected them. And I specifically write about Raymond Carver's, or the book Raymond Carver's, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love.
Love, right.
So the author is Brian Evanson, though. So he, that book, when he was 18 years old and he was starting with his creative writing workshops, had an impact on him. So the book is part memoir, part literary discussion, but I could not put this book down. It's only about 120 pages or so, but he writes about being a Mormon and what how that affected his writing and how he had to break away from the religion. He writes about a bad relationship he had to get out of, a life-threatening condition. And yet, meanwhile, he's saying how Raymond Carver and these stories made a big difference in his writing life. He also writes about that Gordon Lish, Raymond Carver controversy, where it's well known that Gordon Lish strong-armed Raymond Carver's writing to the point where he, and in this book, he does percentages. Like, he went to the Lilly Library and looked at the manuscripts, Gordon Lish's manuscripts. That Carver would have had a 20-page story, and Gordon Lish whittled it down to 5 pages. He sees where all the lines in the pages are crossed out, maybe 2 left, and in Lish's handwriting, the ending of a story.
Why?
Well, Lish is a very famous editor, and he created the career for Carver. It is well known that. But and in this book, he doesn't say whether it's right or wrong,
okay,
but he does say, because it is still the Carver story, but it is, when is editing too much? Where did Lish become too aggressive? And why did Carver not push back? But here he was a writer, he was starting out, and here was this powerful New York editor,
right,
that really made his career.
He wanted to be published.
He wanted to be published.
Right. Raymond Carver, who was the godfather of the modern short story, mm-hmm, as far as I'm concerned, and died young, sadly.
He did. And so this book is really fascinating about how he went to the Lilly Library and looked into this. He wanted to write about it. He came against the estate with Tess Gallagher throwing her lawyers at him. Again, in a very slim book that is written, what I say in the blog, it's written like you're listening to your best friend.
The blog is thelongestchapter.com. It's important for anybody who loves to read. It's Cassie Rose's blog. Robin Nesbitt is here with quick picks from the Columbus Library. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. We're coming to you live from the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown, sun-drenched and magnificent, and we will be right back. Don't go away. Heart of Darkness, Charlotte's Web, Left Behind, War and Peace, To Kill a Mockingbird, The Picture of Dorian Gray. These are just a few of the 100 titles of The Great American Read. Is your favorite on the list? If you go to our website, WOSU.org, you can learn more about The Great American Read, which is going on now with PBS having a second TV volume of that, hosted by Meredith Vieira. You can find it on our website at WOSU.org. I learned about books I'd never heard of before and read a few of them and enjoyed them very, very much. We are talking about books on today's All Sides Weekend Books. Boy, that was easy to figure out, wasn't it? See, you got to get up pretty early in the morning to fool me. I'm Christopher Purdy. I'm with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the new and magnificent Hilliard branch of the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and she brings us the library's latest quick picks. And I noticed, do I see Sally Field up there?
You do. So she has a book coming out on September 18th. So that would be next week. Yeah. In Pieces by Sally Field. This is her basically biography about her highs and lows. And I saw something, I read about this somewhere in the newspaper, and she was nervous about writing about it, but it also talks about her relationship with Burt Reynolds. So yeah, it's her book about her life, her relationships, Burt Reynolds, all the good, probably good, you know, juicy gossip, I'm sure.
So how does that become a quick pick? Is it because of the juicy gossip?
I think part of it
sure.
is, you know, part of, right? Part of it is celebrity memoirs, celebrity biographies do really well. Mm-hmm. And also with quick picks, we want to have a variety. We don't want it to just be James Patterson. We don't want it to just be Fear. So our selectors do a really good job of kind of scanning the horizon and say, hey, what do we think is going to be really hot? And what are our readers here in Central Ohio going to want to come in and get? The other thing, too, is we will go back and pick up a quick pick. So perhaps, you know, a book doesn't seem like it's going to be much. And then all of a sudden it gets some sort of press or the author shows up on TV and then boom, we've got holds and we're like, hey, we should probably make this a quick pick. So a lot of factors go into why something gets onto the quick pick
list. Her trajectory is very interesting, from Gidget and the Flying Nun to an Academy Award winner for Norma Rae.
Right.
And the other picture, which I forget, but I mean, she became a very powerful
right.
anti-Flying Nun, anti-Gidget kind of an actor.
Right.
There was a big spread on her in the New York Times last week about this book.
And That's what I read,
she did say that she was, in a way, grateful that Burt Reynolds was not alive to read this book because
okay.
it would have, she said it would have hurt him.
Yeah, that's what
which didn't stop her from writing it, thank
right.
you very much. But, you know, so it's called In Pieces?
Called In Pieces by Sally Field, and it's due out this Tuesday, September 18th.
So you put things on the Quick Picks list before they're published?
Correct. So we identify, because we purchase books
right.
ahead of time. We
right.
are selectors by, we have things on the catalog at least 3 or 4 months ahead
right.
of time, so you can go ahead and place hold. And really big books. I know when we bought Harry Potter, we would put him on, you know, we'd know about it 6 months in advance, and we'd just get it out there so that people could get their names on the list and just start letting those holds build up, and then that way we could get enough copies in the system.
Every branch that I've been to, and I haven't been to all of them, have big displays about the Quick Picks.
Yes.
They're right there
yep.
when you walk in the door. They're
yep.
right there.
Absolutely.
Easy to see. And you said if you show up at a branch at 8:59 on a Tuesday, you'll be locked out until 9.
Right.
But if you walk in at 9 o'clock, you might be able to pick up Fear or something.
And
right
if you
there.
Don't see it, ask. We are, you know, our staff are
you
supposed
hoard them, don't you?
Right.
They're in somebody's purse
no.
under the desk.
They're delivered in the morning, and so staff do get in early to start checking in books. And so if you don't see something out on the Quick Pick shelf, make sure you inquire at the desk, because we may not have gotten them trundled out right away at 9:01. So make sure you inquire and say, hey, where's the new Quick Picks at? So.
Well, does every library, though, have a different Quick Picks presentation?
No, essentially we all
or you
get
do all the same thing.
We get essentially the same thing, right? You know, so I mean, we may like Hilliard may get
you mix it
more.
Up though. The displays aren't identical.
Correct.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, and Hilliard may get more because we're a bigger branch as opposed to some of our smaller locations. But essentially, right, we get the same titles.
So, what about the book Cherry that has hit the bestseller list, and it's by the Cleveland author whose name I am forgetting, but who is in jail? Has that hit the
Well,
quick
that's
pick
something you don't remember.
No.
They're in jail. But.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that you can't interview him because he's in jail.
Right. It could if the holds get substantial
so
enough.
So it's the holds that
part
determine
of it is,
it.
Yeah,
okay.
Part of it is, you know, that you know you're watching that demand piece and trying to figure out, you know, okay, do we need some extra? Or as I said earlier, we buy 2-to-1. Sometimes we're meeting the list demand so quickly just through regular mm-hmm. copies. So
well, and the reason that one comes to mind because he is an Ohioan.
Right.
He fought in the war. And came back and
right.
had, you know, post-traumatic stress and got
right.
into the opioids and then robbed banks to pay for the opioids. And
yes, that
in
got
jail.
A lot of
yes,
press. Somebody interviewed him or maybe by phone or something. But
mm-hmm. probably after you talking about it now, we'll need quick picks.
Yeah. Well, what's also interesting is that I read that whatever comes from the sales of this book, he's paying back the banks.
Really?
I read that in the New York Times.
Really? Wow.
Cool.
Yeah. And the title is Cherry.
It's called Cherry.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's nonfiction. Is it a memoir of his...
It says in the beginning pages it's fiction.
That's what I thought.
But it's very much, but it's based on
his
experience.
I'm writing it down.
Right?
I'm going to go online, as I do after we
right.
get off the air in the show. I'm going to go on.
It's got a pretty cool cover, too, I think.
It
so,
does.
Yeah.
It does.
Yeah. I haven't read it yet, but I have heard a lot of press about it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. So, Cassie Rose, you don't bring us Sally Field, but who do you bring us next?
I think I want to talk about Will Haygood's book that is
oh,
coming
yes.
out. I haven't read it. It's called Tigerland, 1968 to 1969, A City Divided, A Nation Torn Apart, and A Magical Season of Healing. It is about the East High School Tigers.
Here
in Columbus. And this, I mean, it's a beautiful book and, you know, published by Knopf, and it It's based in Columbus, about the baseball and the basketball teams at East High School during these years of 68 and 69, when there's racial conflict and we had the assassinations of Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And here, this team in a school where they didn't have much money, and they were the dream team. They went on to the state championships, beating the schools that had all the white teams, and they had a lot of money.
This is East High School.
This is East High School that's on Broad Street.
Yeah.
And it's this wonderful story. It's a great sports story, an inspiring one. That's what I'm reading about it, and I'm looking forward to reading it.
I am too. Will Haygood is a Columbus born in Columbus. He doesn't live here now, but and his wonderful book, if you haven't read The Haygoods of Columbus, is a terrific book about his family.
I think that was his first one.
I think it was his first book, and he grew up about a mile from where we're sitting now.
On Vernon Avenue.
On Vernon Avenue, yes.
Cool.
And he also, he has a wonderful biography out on Sammy Davis Jr., which really tells you how difficult his life was. For example, playing Vegas with Sinatra. He couldn't stay in the hotels where he was playing, you know, until Sinatra said, "I'll burn the place down unless you accommodate him." But this was in the 60s. This was long after his career was underway. But
He's taken on some big figures. Thurgood Marshall,
Adam
Clayton Powell. Mm-hmm. He's written some really wonderful books about these historic figures.
Yeah.
I just was handed a note. I was just handed a note. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. We're having Will Haygood on All Sides Monday. He'll be on this program Monday at 11. 11 to noon, Will Haygood will be on with Ann Fisher. That's great. He's a terrific interview, so I'll be listening to that one as well. So have you begun reading that book yet?
No, I have just I just got it, and I've just so far been paging through it. I just keep picking it up, and I read the captions to the photos. I start reading paragraphs, and it's just like, okay, I need to finish what I'm reading now, and then I'll start into this.
I suspect that's going to become a quick pick.
Mm-hmm. I would suspect,
too. I really do. I do. You've got Vince Flynn. I'm looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, I've got – well, I do want to mention the International Latino Book Fair that's here at Main Library this Saturday at 10 to 5 p.m. So they're going to have Latino authors, books, workshops, and storytelling. So I want to put in a plug for that. So if you're interested in Latino writing, make sure you come down to Main Library. Carl Hyacin has a new one out. Carl Hyacin is great. He's funny, but he writes kids' books, and so this new one is called Squirm. It's out September 25th. And he often writes his kids' books are focused on environmental issues. He's a Floridian, snarky, satiric, just great, great read. But his kids' books are okay for kids. I wouldn't hand his adult books to kids, but the kids' ones are fine, obviously. This one is about a tween, Billy Dickens, who wondered about his absent father. He finds out that his father has gone to Montana, and he flies there alone and unannounced. So I'm sure that could be very interesting if Dad was not expecting this young kid to show up. So Squirm by Carl Hyacin, September 25th.
And that is a quick pick.
That's a quick pick.
So when you have books on the list that have yet to be published, a lot of people don't have that book in their hand
yet. Right.
Are there already advanced reserves for them?
Yes. So that's another thing, right? By putting this out on the catalog, we have it out there ready to go. You can put holds on it, and that way we can kind of, again, determine demand. So, and that's why I say we watch our holds. And so that's how we could do a quick pick, you know, after the fact. And I don't have a title on my mind right now, but I know I've seen things where we get an email say, by the way, this is a quick pick due to, you know, whatever interest, or the author was on TV or that kind of thing. So.
And you obviously, your quick picks are not limited to fiction.
Correct. And that's what
Fear is what? 1,672
people. Yeah, 1,672.
So far, so
yeah, we have
probably 2,000 by now.
Right,
since half hour. Yes.
Exactly. We have adult fiction, nonfiction, and like Squirm is a kid's book. So we do the whole gamut. Yeah.
This is All Sides Weekend Books. We're coming to you live from the Columbus Metropolitan Library downtown with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Robin Nesbitt is the manager of the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library, and she comes to us for every show with the latest in the library's quick picks and book buzz. What is book buzz?
So book buzz is on Sunday, October 28th from 2 to 3:30. We're going to have myself plus our central selectors, the people who actually buy the books.
Oh, I want to come to that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about upcoming adult, teen, and children's hot fiction, hot nonfiction. So this is from 2 to 3:30 here at Main Library, probably right here in this space where we're sitting, and I'm looking at my friend Ben, who's shaking his head. And I think it's going to be exciting. I don't know. I've been to a lot. I know. I think think you've been to BoucherCon, or not BoucherCon, BEA, where they have editors come on and buzz about their books, the things they're excited about. So that's what we're going to try to replicate here at Maine Library, is the things that we're excited about, things you may not be aware of that are coming out. So it should be a lot of fun. It's the first one we've ever done, I think, for the general public. So.
You know, when I was a kid, you go to the library to take out books and you couldn't talk. Seriously, you couldn't talk.
Yeah.
It was like being in church.
Right. That's not,
much
that's
so.
Not true anymore.
That's, that model is gone,
right.
isn't it? Because when I go into the libraries in the Columbus system, and I'm thinking particularly of about a year ago, I was out on the west side for a meeting, and I was in a, frankly, an underserved neighborhood where you have a branch there. And I was in there for a meeting about 5 o'clock of a Tuesday afternoon, and there were scads of people helping kids with homework. And there were children everywhere, a lot of Somali children. There were several classes in English for the adults. I mean, the place was jumping, and I was so impressed by the staff there.
Great.
And I've been impressed by staffs of every branch that I visited, but clearly these library branches and the Maine certainly become, they become what pubs are in England. They become community resource centers.
There's a term, they're called a third place. It's not home, it's not school, it's a place where you can go and be with other people. The great thing about the public library is you can come in here and I don't expect you to buy anything. In fact, I don't, you don't have to. I mean, you know, a lot of times there isn't anything to buy. The other thing about a public library, there's a great article right now in the New York Times, just came out here a couple of weeks ago, talking about that the public libraries across this country are the social network and the social services agency for a lot of people. We are the last bastion of democracy. Anybody can walk into this building despite creed, color, beliefs. You can be in this library. We do allow
income.
Talking. It, exactly. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And you can be in here and you can talk. And we do have a code of conduct. We want you to keep it down because you don't want to disrupt your neighbors, that kind of thing. But we do have a – I have to have a lot of conversation with customers who are like, well, it's not as quiet as when I was a kid. And I'm like, you're correct. It's not. And we do encourage low-level talking. We want kids to be here. We want adults to be here. We want people to come and share. And I just think in today's society, this is the kind of place we continue to need and support.
It's it's, you know what else? It's safe.
Exactly.
It's
absolutely
a safe place.
Absolutely.
Which I think for children particularly in some neighborhoods is paramount.
Oh,
it's very, very important.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have seen people and I have seen architecturally places set up to accommodate children and people who wanting to be with them and sort of guide them through reading and just happy that they're there.
Correct.
Which I think is very, very important.
Libraries are much more than books anymore.
That's right. Yeah, great lines. I'm going to put that on my car.
All right.
Libraries are just are much more than books right now. Not that we don't love books.
That's right.
Hence the name of the title of the show, All Sides Weekend Books, trying to keep employed here. Cassie Rose, I would like another recommendation from you.
I think I'm going to talk about a book that I don't think many people will be interested in it. I will just say that to begin with. It's called The Long Take by Robin Robertson. And it is on the long list for the Man Booker Prize. And I started reading it and loving it. The reason I'm saying that I'm not sure that everybody would want to read this book is because it's written as a long poem. So think of the Iliad and think of the Odyssey. And this is about a – and this is the first time a book like this has been a finalist for the Man Booker. That's this – it's essentially, as I said, it's a narrative poem, and it's about a man, a veteran of World War II, and he goes, he's from Nova Scotia, and he finds himself wandering through New York and Los Angeles and San Francisco to basically find himself again. So it's, that's sort of a short description of it. I know we're running out of time. I'll just leave it at that and say that there are some wonderful books like Thomas and Beulah by Rita Dove. That's a long narrative poem that is a story.
Rita Dove, yeah.
And The Sea of Hooks, which is by Lindsay Hill, another poet who wrote poetically in the narrative form. I recommend taking a look at it because you know what? It just, it, sometimes you just need to shake it up. So just, you know, shake it up a little bit and get away from, you know, the books that you're commonly reading and give it a try.
Shake it up with a long poem.
Yeah,
thank you very much for that.
Exactly.
This has been All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy, live from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Thank you, Greg Dodd, Library Director of Marketing. Thank you, Ben Simitsky, Library Guru of PR and Marketing. Thank you, Kevin Petrilla and Eric French, who got us on the radio. The producer of All Sides is Mary Lee Williams. The assistant producer is Kyle McKinnon. The All Sides interns are Martin Coleman, who's glaring at me from the front row, Kylan Martin, Maisie Glockner, and Ray Brewster, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Bruce. Thank you very much, as always, Robin Nesbitt from the Hilliard branch of the Columbus Library. And thank you, Cassie Rose, thelongestchapter.com. I'm Christopher Purdy, out.